We're holding on page Lamed Ches in Chagiga, about 7 or 8 lines from the top, middle of verse Yud Dalid. We learned last time that the Mishnah had said that anybody who doesn't show proper regard for Hashem's honor would have been better if he hadn't come into the world. And one thing we said, Rabbi Abba had said, that means somebody who stares at a rainbow. Because since the Shekhinah appears in a rainbow, then it's not appropriate to be staring at it because then it shows a disrespect for the Shekhinah. So in this connection, Darash of Yehuda ben Achmeni, Meturgemoni de Rish Lakish, of Yehuda ben Achmeni, who was the Meturgemon of Rish Lakish, when Rish Lakish would give a drasha in public, then this Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni would be his Meturgemon to explain it to the public. So he himself was a Talmud Chacham in his own right. So he said the following statement, call him Stak of Shloshed Dvarim Ein of Kehes. A person looks at any of the following three things, his eyesight is going to go dim. Bakeshes, a rainbow, over Nasi, or to look at the Nasi, over Koyanim, or the Koyanim when they're Duchnim. And we learn all three of those from, Psukim. Bakeshes, Tichtiv, Kimare, Akeshes, Ashiyah, Ba'onan, Regemuhu, Mare. We see that Yechezkel compares the vision of the glory of Hashem that he saw in the Ma'aseh Merkava to the rainbow. So therefore, like we said before, the Shekhinah appears, certain semblance of the Shekhinah appears in the rainbow. Maharsha points out, if the actual Shekhinah was present in the rainbow and a person looked in it, then b'chal, he wouldn't be able to live. Ki lo yirani adam b'chal. So now, instead, his eyesight just goes dim, which is a form, which is a minor form of Misa, because as we know that there are several people who are Chashuv and Kemes, and one of them is a blind person. Next, Benasi, Dichtiv, Nasat, Mehod, Cha'olav, Hashem tells Moshe when he's appointing Yeshua that you should place some of your glory on him. So meaning, in other words, again, a Nasi in future generations has a semblance of the glory of Hashem, of the glory of the Shekhinah on him, and therefore a person shouldn't be staring at him. Bakoyanim means Bizman Shabis Mekdash Kaim Bishasha Ulla Duchan, means specifically when the Bis Mekdash is standing and the Koyanim are going to Duchan, or Mavorchim Sa'am B'Shem HaMefodash, and they're benching the people using, when they say Birchas Koyanim, then they actually use the Shem HaMefodash in the Bis Mekdash. They say the name Yudke Vodke as it is, or there's different opinions which name of Hashem exactly is the Shem HaMefodash, but anyway, the point is, so then the Shekhinah actually rests on their fingers, and then for a person to look at them would cause him to lose his eyesight. Tosfos actually talks about that even nowadays you're not supposed to look at the Koyanim, which is why we cover our faces with the talisim, and the Koyanim also cover their hands with the talis. There are actually kehilos, I think, where they have the minhag that the Koyanim don't cover their hands. But in any case, you are technically allowed to look at them. You shouldn't stare at them nowadays for a different reason, not because the Shekhinah is resting on their fingertips, but because hesach hadas, because you're going to get distracted from listening to Birkas Koyanim. But in the times of the Beis Mikdash, you shouldn't be looking at them at all, because as he's saying over here. Okay, another drasha from the same Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, which also relates back to what we learned before. Drasha Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, Meturgemoni de Rish Lakish. The same Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, who was the Meturgemon of Rish Lakish, gave the following drasha. My dichtim, the pasuk that says, "Al ta'aminu v'reya," don't trust in a friend, "va'al tibtachu ba'aluf," and don't rely on a leader. So who is the friend and who is the leader over here? So he says, it means, if your Yetzahara is going to say to you, do an Aveira, and don't worry, Hashem will forgive you. Don't believe him, shenema al taminu bereya. And we're darshaning the word reya, reish ayin, since it's written like that, it can also be read as ra, the evil one, but in ra, the Yetzahara, shenema, ki yetzer leva adam ra min ura. As we see, Hashem describes the yetzer of a person is ra, is evil, even from his youth. So al taminu bereya means don't trust the yetzahara when he poses as a good friend and says it's fine, you can do an aveira and you'll get away with it. Now, Maharsha points out, obviously we have to be talking about even the yetzahara, even though a person is not going to be so stupid as to believe that Hashem will forgive him without doing tshuva. However, what the Yetzirah is saying, it's fine, you'll do the Aveira having in mind that you'll do Tshuva. But we know that's no good also. If a person says, I'm going to do the Aveira and then I'm going to do Tshuva, then Ein Maspikin B'Yadei, Hashem doesn't always give him the opportunity to do Tshuva. Fine, the Altareba points out in Igeres HaTshuva, Dochak V'Nichnas, he can push his way in and do Tshuva, but Hashem's not going to make it easy for him like he would for everybody else, because the very fact that he knows there's an opportunity for Tshuva is itself giving him the motivation to do the Aveda, and therefore that's a problem. So that's what we're saying. Don't believe the Yetzer Hara when he says, it's fine, you can do Tshuva, and you'll be able to get away with it. And when the pasuk continues, Val tivtechu ba'aluf, and don't rely on the aluf, the leader, who is the aluf, ain aluf, ala HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenem aluf nu'urayota, as we see, that the Jewish people call Hashem, you're the aluf, you're the leader of my youth. In other words, you've led us as Jewish people since we were first a nation. So in other words, again, it means don't trust the Re'ah, the Yetzirah, when he's going to say, Hashem will forgive you. No, don't rely on the Aluf that Hashem is going to forgive, because that's not the way to go about it. You don't do an Aveda having in mind that you're going to do Tshuva. Ion Yaakov points out this connects with the on the face of it, the Gemara is bringing this in, because again, he brought one Jerusha from Yehuda Bar Nachmeni, so the Gemara brings another Jerusha from him, as it often does. However, Ion Yaakov points out this also connects to the previous piece of Gemara. We learned last time on Thursday that a person does an Aveda in secret. It shows that he has a lack of respect for Hashem, because it's like he's acting as though Hashem doesn't know what's going on. But on the other hand, we said there are certain times when maybe it's better, that's the least worst option, because the alternative would be making Chilul Hashem, which is worse. So here you have a person is going to do an Aveda in secret and say, fine, big deal, Hashem will be Moichel. After all, at least I didn't make a Chilul Hashem. Nevertheless, don't listen to the Yetzirah in that as well. And continues Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmeni, Shema Yom Odom Mimeidbi. So a person is going to say to himself, okay, so if I do an Aveda and nobody knows about it, who's going to give Eidos against me? The answer is Avne Beisa Shel Odom, Vekodesh Beisa, the stones of the very stones of a person's house and the beams of his house, Rahite Beisa, and the Rahitim of his house. In modern Hebrew, Rahitim means furniture. I don't think the Gemara means it in that sense. The word Rahit comes from a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Kodesh Batenu Arozim Rahitenu Broisim, where Rahitim means over there something like the rain gutters or different things like that, different parts of the trim of the house. So the Pashas, it means the same thing over here. Anyway, so those also, shall Adam, of a person, the Eden boy, those are all going to be the things that testify against him in front of Hashem. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ki Evan Mekir Tizak, of stone will cry out from the wall, the Chofis Me'et Yanena, and a piece of wood will answer it from the, and a piece of wood will answer it back. We have the famous Hayom Yom, that nowadays the Domim is quiet and lost its lover, it's going to start screaming out, why'd you walk on me when you're not thinking words of Torah? But he was saying, and another point of it is as well, the Averis that a person does in secret in his house, and he thinks nobody's watching, those beams and stones themselves, those are Hashem's security cameras, so to speak, and they're going to testify against him. By the way, the Rif over here on Ein Yaakov points out another angle on what Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmeni is saying. Besides, so we said, Marsha says that the vote is that the person is going to think, okay, so I'll do the Aveda, but I'll have in mind to do Tshuva, and that'll help. The Rif makes another point as well. How does a person come to have a Yetzirah in the first place? Because Hashem put it in him. So the person is likely to think to himself, you know what? So it's not so bad. I'll listen to my Yetzirah, and then I'll use it as an excuse. When Hashem calls me to judgment, look, you put a Yetzirah inside me. What do you want from me? So don't think you're going to get away with that. And now a person is going to think that who's going to know the difference? The answer is the wood and stones of his house will know the difference.
Moshe Rabbeinu is using that excuse for
Egel Azov. That excuse for the Egel Azov, and Hashem accepted it. Fine, but a person can't use that excuse for himself. Yeah. Tanya Reb Shilo Reb Zvika Omer Shnei Malachi Asheres Hamalavin Lo Yerosei Meidin Boy. Another way of looking at it is not just the wood and the stones of his house that will testify at him. Also, the two Malachi Asheres that constantly accompany a person are going to say Eidus against him. Shnei Ma Ki Malachim Itzavaloch. The pasuk says Hashem commands His Malachim to be with you. So now those Malachim are also going to see and hear everything he does and be able to testify to Hashem. By the way, nowadays we say it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. We don't assume that we're accompanied by Malachim, and this has a nafkamina and halacha. There's in Gemara Brachas, it mentions that when a person is going to the bathroom, he should say a short paragraph asking the Malachim to excuse him while he goes to the bathroom. Nowadays we don't say that because we don't hold ourselves on the level that we're accompanied by Malachim. But nevertheless, there still is that there still can be that a person is accompanied by them and they'll testify. Reb Zvika, Emor, V'chachamim, I mean, Neshmasa Shalada Me'idibai, a person's own neshama will be the Eidos against him. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Mishecheves Chekecha, from the one that lies in your lap, Shmur Pischei Picha, guard, watch out the openings of your mouth. Now, what lies in your lap? Ezo Dabar Sheshori, this is also from those psukim in Micha. It's actually the end of the same pasuk, Al Tamina Bereyev, Al Tivtuchu Ba'aluf, the same pasuk continues, Mishecheves Chekecha, Shmur Pischei Picha. So, Ezehu Dover Sheshore B'Cheikah Shalom, what is it that lies in a person? Actually, Chek is not really a lap, Chek is more a person's bosom. What is it that lies in a person's bosom, inside a person's body? Hevi emes u'neshama. So therefore, so it means that the Navi is warning you, watch out from the one that dwells within your own chait, within your own bosom, that it's going to testify about what you're doing wrong. Another thing is the limbs of a person are going to say Eidos on him. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Va'atim Eidain Um Hashem. Hashem says, you, plural, are my Eidim. It says Hashem, Va'ani Kael, and I am Hashem. So implying that there's a plural over here, that there's a person's own Eivarim that are going to be able to testify against him. Now, this piece of Gemara was also in Tainus. So the Rashba explained that the symbolism behind it is like this. When we say that a person's wood and stones and whatnot of his house are going to testify against him, the Rashba says what it really means is his neighbors eventually are going to find out what he's doing and they're going to publicize it. So they're symbolized over here by the wood and stones of a house. Then the second opinion says that not just that, but also the Malachi Asharis, representing, in other words, that usually Hashem watches a person. Hashem has his Malachim watching and guarding a person. But we have a pasuk actually in this week's parasha, the Starti Fonai Mehem V'Hoyolach, that Hashem sometimes removes his specific Ashgacha Pratis from the person and makes him, like, so to speak, left under the control of nature, and that Hashem doesn't openly intervene so much in his life. So now, when a person is in that situation, then those Malachim that are supposed to be guarding him, Hashem's agent in the world that are supposed to be guarding him, leave him, and that's what's represented by, we say that the Malachim are going to testify against him. In other words, it's going to be visible that he's not guarded and protected by Hashem to the same extent as he was before. Then the third opinion that Ashba continues is, you also have, okay, sometimes you have, the Rishoyim are successful in this world, they make it through until they die, and nothing happens to them, but they're going to be judged in the Olam HaEmes. So in that sense, we can say that the Neshama at that point is going to testify against him in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. And then the fourth opinion says, the Yesh Omrim says, in addition, sometimes you have, a person has to be punished with his body as well. For example, you have sometimes in a person's lifetime even, that you have something happens to him with a body part that he did something wrong with, and sometimes you have, like in Toshacha in last week's parasha, there are diseases and fevers and all kinds of things, so that's all included in this idea that a person's body testifies against him. Marsha there in Tainus explains further. He says also there's three different ways that there's three different ways that a person might do an avera. He might be doing a lav, he might be failing to do a mitzvah eser, and there might be where he does an avera in speech. So therefore, so he explains that each of these things, the malachim and the neshama and the body, each of them represents how he's going to be accused of one of these three types of averas. So in other words, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Hanani is saying, don't think you're going to get away with any of these three areas of avera, because you should know Hashem says, I have plenty of edim, I have plenty of edim that are ready to testify against you. Okay. The next Mishnah in Masechta Chagiga talks about like this. Now, Masechta Chagiga is supposed to be talking about the dinim of the Korban Chagiga that you bring on Yom Tov. You have to bring, when you come to this Mikdash, on Yom Tov, you have to bring an Ola Sri'iya, an Ola in honor of the fact that you're appearing in front of Hashem, and Shalmei Chagiga, a Shlomim in honor of the Yom Tov. And you eat the Shlomim, and that's your Simchas Yom Tov. So now, having digressed to other topics, the Masechta, the Mishnah, is going back to that topic. Now you have like this: when you're bringing many kinds of korbanos, you're supposed to do smicha on them. You lean your hands on the animal. The samach yodei al rosh korbanai. There's machloikas, it was actually the first long-standing machloikas among the chachamim whether you do that on Yom Tov or not. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains, actually discusses it briefly in the Gemara here in Chagiga as well, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, what the basis of that machlokas is. Is it a machlokas whether the smich has to be done right before the shchita of the korban, or is it a machlokas whether the korban should be brought at all on Yom Tov? In any case, so the Mishnah describes that we have the famous five zugers that we have also in Pirkei Avos, Yosef ben Ezra and Yosef ben Yochanan, and Yeshua ben Prachya and Nita HaBeili, and so forth, going down to Hillel and Shammai. So the Mishnah describes how in every one of those five generations, there was machloikas on this topic. We're between them, between the zugers. One of them, the Nasi, would hold one way as far as this din, and the other one, the Avos din, would hold the other way. This was actually the first really long-standing machloikas. In fact, the Gemara has the expression that it was the first machloikas ever, but Tosfos explains it really wasn't. There were other machloikas in before that, but they weren't among the members of the Sanhedrin themselves, or even if they were resolved fairly quickly. Here you have, it was a machlokas that persisted across generations. Elsewhere, there's a Yerushalmi, I think, that says that what happened was in Yosef and Yezer, up until Yosef and Yezer and Yosef and Yochanan's times, actually the Gemara mentions it, Bavli mentions it in Temura, up until their times, they were learning Torah as clearly as it had been given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. So therefore, people can have questions in halacha, and people can have disputes and whatever, but the Sanhedrin would be able to resolve it because of their tremendous knowledge of Torah. At the end of Yosef ben Yezer and Yosef ben Yochanan's lifetime, Tsaris began. They lived in the time before the Nes Chanukah, so you had Antiochus and the Greeks and all of that. So therefore, they didn't have the clarity of mind, and therefore this machlokas began, and they were never able to resolve it from generation to generation, and therefore it persisted. So the Mishnah mentions, again, that you have the five zugas, where within each zug, there was a machlokas on it. The third zug, as we know also from Pirkei Avos, is Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shotach. So now the Gemara presents a machlokas, which one of them was the Nasi and which one was the Av Beis Din. Now usually, like in Pirkei Avos, the Nasi is listed first. So since over there, Yehuda ben Tabai is listed first, on the face of it, he's the Nasi. But the Gemara brings the following story, for which the Gemara says, on the face of it, it seems that maybe Yehuda ben Tabai was not the Nasi. The story is as follows. Tananabon, an Omer of Omer Yehuda ben Tabai. And by the way, you know, we know that the Chachamim of these generations are not yet called Revi. They're just called Yehuda ben Tabai, Shimon ben Shaddach, etc. Because famously, Godol Merab and Shmoy, in those times, they were so great, they didn't need a title with their name, just their name itself is their title. Anyway, so Omer Yehuda ben Tabai. Ere ben Chama, he says, may I see the comfort. So there's two ways of, you know, it's a lashon of shvur. It's a lashon where he's swearing something. There's two ways of explaining what he means by that. Tosfos explains that he means, it actually means, may I not see, but he doesn't want to say it as a curse, so he says it in a euphemistic way. He's saying, may I not see the comfort of tzia, and the comfort of Mashiach coming, and Marsha points out, now he was living in the middle of the time of the second Bais HaMikdash. There's still a Bais HaMikdash. The Jewish people are mostly in Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, it was well known that this is not the Gula HaMitzvah Vashlema. They're under the control of the Goyim, or even when they're not, they're having the other problems, and then there were nevuahs that there's yet going to be, that the Bais HaMikdash is yet going to be destroyed, and there's going to be more galus in. So therefore, Yehuda ben Tabai can well be saying that I know there's yet going to be a nechama, there's going to be a full geula hamitzvah shlema, and he's saying as a loshen of a curse, may I not see it if what I'm going to say is not true. It's a loshen of shavur. Rashi elsewhere gives a different explanation that what he means is, he does mean, may I see the comfort. He means, Rahman al-Fan, may my own children pass away and I should have to be comforted with Nichum Avelim for them if what I'm saying, if the following thing that I'm saying is not true. Either way, it's a Lashon of Shavur. It's a Lashon of him wanting to say very strongly that the following thing that I'm going to tell you is absolutely true. Anyway, in Loi Haragti Eid Zoymim, what I did one time, Yehuda ben Tabai says, I had an Eid Zoymim executed. Now I did that in order to demonstrate that's not like the tzedukim. Now you have like this. We know what Edim Zomim are. You have Reuven and Shimon, two Edim, come to Beis Din and say, we testify that Yankel broke Shabbos or killed Pliny or whatever. And then two other Edim, Levi and Yehuda, come and say, well, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But you can't say that because you weren't there at the time. You were with us someplace else at the time, and you couldn't have possibly seen it. And the Torah says that as long as everything checks out, we believe the second set of Edim and the first set get whatever punishment they were going to do to the person they falsely accused. So if it was Misa, then Misa, Malchus, Malchus, etc. Now, we have a concept when it comes to Edim Zomim that we carry out the sentence on them only if the sentence of Misa or Malchus that they had wanted to do to the other guy had not yet been done yet. So they accuse Yankel. If Yankel has not been executed yet, then we take Reuven and Shimon and execute them for testifying falsely that he broke Shabbos or what have you. But if Yankel was already executed by Beis Din, then we don't. Mephoshim give a variety of reasons for it, because then it means that it was Min HaShemayim, the guy evidently deserved to be killed for something else, or because then their crime is so terrible that even them being executed by Beis Din is not going to be a kapara for them, so they're just going to have to have it dealt with in the Olam HaEmes, whatever. There's a number of different reasons, but that's how the halacha is. We have the famous expression that says kasha zaman below kasha osa, that says that we have to punish them according to what they plotted, which implies not according to what they actually did. The actual formulation kasha zaman below kasha osa we first find in Rashi, but the concept is found in the Gemara, and it's part of the halacha. Anyway, the tzedukim, who famously didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, they didn't hold of that. They claimed that no, the Edim Zomim are executed even if the guy was already killed or whipped by Beis Din. So Yehuda ben Taba is saying, one time I had a situation with the Edim Zayman, and I had the guy executed in order to demonstrate that the Tzedukim are wrong. The story was that the guy they had accused had not, in fact, yet been executed by Beis Din. And Yehuda ben Taba is saying, I made sure to carry out the penalty on them in order that everybody should realize that Tzedukim don't know what they're talking about. So Amalei Shimon and Shadach, the Shimon and Shadach says, that's fine, but Erev Nechama, may I see the Nechama, again, a Lashon of Shavua, in Lo Shafachta Dom Noki. The fact is, he says to Yehudim and Taba, you spilled innocent blood. Shadei Omer Chachamim, Eino Edim Zemim in Neharogan, Adshi Yizomu Shnehem. You don't kill the Edim Zemim unless both of them have been impeached, right, by Hazama. Vein Loikin Adshi Yizomu Shnehem, and the same way for Malkus, it has to be both of them. Vein Meshaman Mamun Adshi Yizomu Shnehem, even as far as paying money, it has to be both of them. It has to be that when Levi and Yehuda come to Beis Din, they say, both of you, both Reuven and Shimon, you were with us someplace else. If they say, Reuven, you were with us someplace else, and Shimon not, yes, Reuven is a false aid, but nevertheless, we don't punish him with the penalty of Edim Zemim. Here, it was, in fact, only one aid, and yet Yehuda ben Tabai went and did it anyway. So in other words, the Shimon ben Shadach says to him, then you made a mistake. Yes, you were trying to demonstrate against the Tzedukim, but you also can't kill a person who's not Chayiv Misa by Beis Din for doing that. Now, there are Rishonim who say maybe the guy was Chayiv Misa for some other reason or whatever, so we can sort of exonerate Yehuda ben Tabai. So the point is, Rishonim asks the question, how could Yehuda ben Tabai at Tzadik, how would the Eibishter allow him to make such a terrible mistake? That he killed an innocent person. So Tosfos here and in some other places in Shas explains that primarily when we say that Tzadikim Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe to kol al yideim, that Hashem won't allow a Tzadik to do something wrong, primarily that's talking about Macholas Asuris. Hashem will make sure that Tzadik doesn't eat something which is osur to eat. Because it would be a gnai, it would be a shameful thing that a Tzadik should bring into his body something which is osur, especially because your food becomes damu vosu kibsore, it becomes part of your actual body, so you're going to have for the rest of the Tzadik's life, he's going to have cells in his body that are made of tray for food, if not right. But other kinds of things, Tosfos says Hashem doesn't necessarily protect the Tzadik against mistakes, as in this example over here. There are other Rishonim, the Ritva, and others who say that maybe the guy was Chayiv Misa for some other thing as well, and Yehuda ben Taba used this as an opportunity to demonstrate against the Tzedukim. In fact, the Oruch HaNer there in Makkos, this story is primarily in Gemara Makkos, where it deals with, in the first parak, deals with the dinim of Edim Zayman. So the Oruch HaNer explains over there that Yehuda ben Tabai figured he has to hurry up and do the matter while there are Tzedukim around so that they can clearly see that he's doing against them and everybody should realize that not like them. Nevertheless, Shimon ben Shadach says, you jumped the gun a bit. Anyway, so miyad kibbal all of Yehuda ben Tabai. So Yehuda ben Tabai right away accepted on himself, she'enem murder halocha ele b'fnei Shimon ben Shadach. From now on, he's never going to decide any halocha unless Shimon ben Shadach is around. So the point is, the Gemara ends up, after it tells the rest of the story, which we have here in Ein Yaakov, so the Gemara ends up pointing out, on the face of it, that means that Shimon ben Shadach is the Nasi, and Yehuda ben Tabai is the Av Beis Din, and therefore he's saying, right now, as the Av Beis Din, I passed in something, and it turned out I was wrong, so from now on, I'm going to make sure that the Nasi is around. But the Gemara says, not necessarily, he may mean, in other words, that he's the Nasi, but he's going to make sure that his Av Beis Din, Shimon ben Shadach, is always going to be around when he passes in Halacha, even though really the Nasi outranks the Av Beis Din. There's an explanation even that what it was is that it was, that both are true. Yehuda ben Tabai started out as the Nasi, and then because of the story, he resigned the position and took over the position of Av Beis Din and had Shimon ben Shadach take over the position of Nasi.
Does a Nasi supposed to be in a stage where he knows all Torah?
The Nasi is supposed to be the top level of the Chachamim. He's like in the place of Moshe Rabbeinu in his times, yeah. So that's supposed to be. One idea is, b'chlal, how does it come about that there's a Nasi and an Av Beis Din? So among the various explanations is that the Nasi was meant to be, he was meant to deal sort of more with foreign affairs, like he should be the face of the Jewish people to the outside world. Meanwhile, the Av Beis Din will be the one actually in charge of the Sanhedrin on a day-to-day basis. So there's such an explanation. But
after the...
During the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, there was the king. At that time, the whole concept of the Zugos only began in the middle of the second Beis Hamikdash. Yosef ben Yezir and Yosef ben Yochanan were the first pair of Zugos, and they were around 140 or so years after the second Beis Hamikdash was built. So one explanation is that up until that time, in the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, you had the Kohen Gadol had a double role. He was both the Kohen Gadol and the Beis Hamikdash, and he was also the public face of the Jewish people in dealing with Goyisha kings and whatnot, but there came a point when the Kohanim Gadolim and the second Beis Hamikdash were no good, so therefore the Chachamim came up with the concept of the Nasi. So maybe it's that, whatever it is exactly, the point is that the Nasi had to be the greatest of the Chachamim of his times. So Yehuda ben Tabai now, when we're saying that he's saying from now on I'm going to defer to Shimon ben Shatach, does that mean that all this time Yehuda ben Tabai was the Nasi, but now he's saying from now on I'm not going to paskin unless I also have my Av Beis Din with me to prevent me from making such mistakes in the future? Does he mean that all along he was the Av Beis Din, now he's saying I made a mistake, I should have made sure that I have the Nasis, that I have the Nasi together with me when I'm paskining, because after all the Nasi outranks me? Or does it mean maybe that actually it's now he they switched positions as a result of this story? Anyway. So they said, for the rest of Yehuda ben Tabai's life, he would bow, he would prostrate himself, he would lie on the ground begging for forgiveness by the grave of that guy who had been killed, this Eid Zomim who he had had executed by Beis Din, whereas Shimon ben Shatach told him he wasn't supposed to. They could hear his voice from a distance, people could hear a voice that was coming from the grave crying. People thought it's the voice of the dead man, that he's crying out and demanding for justice or something. But Yehuda ben Tabai tells them, you should know it's my voice. Tevu, and you'll know for a fact that it's my voice. Shalomacha who mess. At some point in the future, he, meaning I myself, I'm going to die. Ve'en kola nishma, and then you're not going to hear the sound anymore. You're not going to hear the voice anymore. So therefore, you should know that it's my voice. In other words, he wants them to realize, in other words, how much a person has to go, to what extent a person has to go to ask Mechila. He's the Nasi or the Av Beis Din, as the case may be. This guy was a Poshet Yid. Nevertheless, he's still going on a constant basis and pleading with the guy to forgive him. However, why would that be such an ironclad proof? We're not saying, obviously, Yehuda ben Tabai is telling the truth, but in other words, if it was just that he's using that as a proof to the people, Tedu, it's not really such a solid proof. Conceivably, people might think, you know what, yes, it was the dead man's voice. Now, when Yehuda ben Tabai passed away, and now they're both in the Olam Ha'emes, then Yehuda finally had the chance to meet him face to face in neshama to neshama and ask him mechila. Or maybe the guy took him in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. Either way, those would explain equally well why the voice stopped. When Yehuda ben Tabai died, people might still think that it was the dead man's voice. So, obviously, yes, Yehuda ben Tabai is telling the truth, it was his voice, but nevertheless, Rav Acha Brei D'Rava is pointing out hundreds of years later to Rav Ashi that the proof that he was using is not really so ironclad. Now, the Mishnah had mentioned, in connection with the Zugos, so again, we said that in each generation of the Zugos, there was this Machlokas. One member of the Zug said that you should do Smicha on the Korbanos on Yom Tov, and the other one said that not. Eventually, we get down, after we go through the first four Zugos, we get to Hillel v'Shammai. But before we have Shammai, the Mishnah mentions Hillel and Menachem loynechahu. It says that Hillel and Menachem, who was his original Av Beis Din, did not argue about it. Some of the folks have learned that it means that Menachem, for the first time in five generations, actually agreed with his Nasi. Others say that it means they just didn't have a time to deal with this before Menachem left. So then the Mishnah says, Yotze Menachem. Menachem left, and Shammai came in as the new Av Beis Din, and Hillel and Shammai continued the same machlokas. So what's this Yotze for Piska? Yotze Menachem, Menichnas Shammai v'chola. The question is, v'heichem Yotze. When we say Menachem went out, where did he go out to? Abaya Amar Yotze L'Tal Rusra. Abaya says it means he went out to a bad way of behavior. In other words, he went off the derech. Rava Amar Yotze L'Avodas HaMelech. Rava says it means he went to work for the government. Tani Nami Hochi. And in fact, we learn like a Braisa, like the way Rava says it, Yotze Menachem L'Avodas HaMelech. Menachem left the Sanhedrin to go work for the king. The Yotze Umet pays Zogas Talmidim L'Roshan Sirikon 80 pairs of Talmud Chachamim. So 160, they're described as 80 pairs because they would learn B'chavrusa, went out with him wearing Sirikon, which means it actually translates as Big Day Malchus, royal clothing. Habona brings over here, and various other Mephoshim also bring something that Josephus tells a little more detail behind this. He says that when Menachem was younger, and when Hurdus, the infamous Hurdus, was younger, this Menachem told him that one day you're going to be a king and you're going to have a long reign. So now, years later, when Hurdus actually became king, then he wanted to honor Menachem for having predicted his rise. So now the vort would be then that Menachem left the Sanhedrin and became a member of Hurdus' cabinet. And then these. So Josephus mentions Menachem by name, and one thing is though, he identifies Menachem as one of the Issyim. In those times, you had the two major, you had the Chachamim, you had the Prushim, who they're, as they're often called, which is the Chachamim, and even the Amei Oretz, who weren't so knowledgeable and careful with certain mitzvahs, were basically on the side of the Chachamim. They knew that the Chachamim represent the genuine Mesoda of Torah, so they may not be careful with every mitzvah themselves, but they know to be on the side of the Chachamim and support them. We find examples of that in the Gemara and Lahavdil. We find examples of it in Josephus' histories. Then you had the Tzedukim. And then you had, Josephus describes a third group, which he called, in English, they're called the Essenes. In Hebrew, they call them Issyim. In particular, they think when they've discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls, they come from that group. Basically, Josephus describes them, they were hermits, they lived in caves, they never married, they lived like lives almost like monks or ascetics or whatever. So he describes this Menachem as one of those. So that could conceivably fit with what Abaye is saying over here, that he went out with Targus Ra, that he actually became one of them rather than staying one of the Chachamim and living a normal life like he's supposed to. What we're saying over here, Yotzal Avodas HaMelech, the other thing is that he went to work for Hurgus. Now, he may have felt, he and the Talmidim who went with him may have figured that maybe they need to under the circumstances. Hurgus, after all, a terrible tyrant, maybe he figured he needs to be, and maybe he figured if he's one of Hurgus's, if he and his, and these Talmidim are among Hurgus's advisors, maybe it'll help that Hurgus will be a little more of a decent king towards the Jews, but nevertheless, we're still saying it's Yotzal, he still went out where he was supposed to be. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So the Gemara continues discussing this whole matter of doing smicha and korbanos. And one thing that comes into the question is smicha something that's an obligation only on men or also on women? Basically, is it a mitzvah sasa shazman groma? So the Gemara mentions, Amar Rabbi Yosi, Sochli Abba Elazar. Abba Elazar told me. Now, Abba Elazar could mean that his father's name was Elazar, or it could mean that Abba Elazar, Abba is sometimes used in the Gemara as a title, like Reb nowadays. Like you have Abba Shol and other examples. Anyway, so Abba Elazar told me, one time we had a calf that was going to be brought for a korban shlamim, and it belonged to the women of the family. We brought it to the Ezras Noshim for the women to do smicha, the samchu all of Noshim, and in fact the women who owned the korban did smicha on it. Not because the women are actually chayev to do smicha, as the Gemara learns from Pesukim, that they're not. But in order to give them the satisfaction that they can think that they're doing the mitzvah. There's Bechlal, there's various places in the Gemara where we have discussion of, where we show them have discussion based on various Gemaras, to what extent are women allowed to do mitzvah sesa, shazman groma, that they're not otherwise chayev in. So, and one big machloikas in it, which persists ad yom hazeh, is the question whether they can make a bracha on such mitzvahs. So, for example, shofar, here we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah in a week and a half. So tkiyas shofar is definitely a mitzvah sesa shazman groma. Women are definitely potter from it, no question about it. They can definitely hear shofar, there's nothing preventing them from hearing shofar, but can they make a bracha on it? Suppose, for example, you're going and blowing shofar on Mitzrayim, where you already were Yotze, then it's a big machloikas in Rishonim whether the bracha can be made or not. In particular, Tosfos here and in other places holds that they could. Yes, they're potter, but they're still allowed to make the bracha. It's not called the bracha levatola. On the other hand, the Rambam holds that not. They wanted to hear the mitzvah because they're hate, but they can't say the bracha. You have a machloikas on that, and the result is when you're going on with soyim, on with the shofar, or with the lulav, or anything like that, if the women that you, if you already have been yotze and you're blowing only for women, if you're blowing for men, then fine, you can make the bracha either way because ko yisrael arevin zelazet. But if it's for women only, it will depend whether they're Ashkenazias or Sardias. If they're Ashkenazias, then the bracha can be said. In that case, it's still better that they say the bracha, but if they don't know how to, then I think you're allowed to. But if they're Sardias, then they should not, and you shouldn't either. Yeah.
Would Safik Bracha L'Chakon apply here?
Safik Bracha L'Chakon would apply, but that's the thing. According to the Baalei HaTosfos and the Ramah Paskins like them, they're allowed to say the bracha. So it's not a matter of Safik, because according to him, they're allowed to say the bracha. Whereas according to the Rambam, they're not. It would be a bracha L'Vatala. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugorola. Yud Tes Elul. So the Rebbe talked about in a sicha. So we know the Zohar has a piece that's brought in a Geras HaKodesh and Simen Chaf Vav, that when the Jewish people are going to taste from the tree of life, which is the Sefer HaZohar, then we're going to go out from Golos with Rachamim. So that, as in fact, Mashiach answered the Baal Shem Tov, when Yafutza minus Secha Chutza, when the wellsprings of Chassidus are spread outward, then Mashiach is going to come. So therefore, so in other words, that's by learning Pnimius HaTorah is how we bring Mashiach closer. We started learning the other day about what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom. So again, first of all, if there's any case where there might be danger to life, then there's no question you call the fire department or whatever it is that takes. So nowadays, more often than not, that's going to be the case because, first of all, we live among the Goyim and they might use it as an opportunity to loot or commit other crimes or whatever. And second of all, also, our houses are close together and it could spread from one house to another and you can't necessarily easily evacuate everybody that fast. But where those considerations don't apply, then you can't do anything with the fire on Shabbos, of course. And the Chachamim made rules of what you're allowed to take out of the burning house, because the Chachamim figured otherwise you're going to be in such a panic that you may forget that it's Shabbos and extinguish the fire or do other things that are also on Shabbos. So the basic rule then is that you can only save things in such a situation that you're allowed, that you need for that day of Shabbos. So, for example, let's say the fire breaks out on Friday night before the Sudah, then you're allowed to save 3 meals worth of food. And that applies both to human and animal food. If it breaks out by day before the daytime meal, then 2 meals worth. If it breaks out in the afternoon, then only 1. Now, you do have a din, though. If you have, for example, 1 container that has a lot of food in it, then you're taking it out all at once, that would be mutter. But if you have separate containers, then you're limited to those amounts. Another possibility would be, for example, you take like a sheet or a blanket or something and start piling more and more and more food into it, and you're taking it out all at once, that would also be mutter. Although the Alter Rebbe adds, it would have to be that if they're inside the blanket like that, it does have to be like it's all one big pile, not like they're tied up or whatever in different parts of the blanket. Similarly, also the various kinds of dishes and other things like that, personal effects that you're going to need on the day of Shabbos, you're also allowed to take out in the same way. Because again, you need those for that Shabbos, and therefore the Chachamim allow you to take that out, but more than that, not, because they were concerned that the person might forget that it's Shabbos and do malachas that are also.
Sure.
Yeah.